Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Roland Chris Blog Talk Radio Station, Pathways to Excellence, where we explore what it takes to meet and exceed the demands of managing a retirement plan in today's complex market. From regulatory developments to fiduciary news and practical tips, tune in to Roland Chris for your step-by-step guide to achieving compliance and confidence in a new fiduciary era. Now, let's begin today's show with an introduction from our Roland Chris host.
Welcome to our audience for this podcast on the Pathways to Excellence channel, sponsored by Roland Chris. I am Christy Arthur, Director of Fiduciary Solutions at Roland Chris, and I will be your host for today's live 15-minute podcast. Our subject today is unraveling the complexities of 403B plans. During our last podcast, we discussed how to stay ahead of the changing healthcare landscape. During today's podcast, we will discuss the impact that federal pension law is having on nonprofit organizations, their executives, and their employees. We will hear proven ideas on how to rectify the common gaps that exist between business practices and federal regulations. With me today in the studio is our guest, Ron Hagen, who is CEO of Roland Chris. He has a lengthy career in developing retirement plan fiduciary processes. Prior to joining the Roland Chris team in 1986, Ron was a senior vice president with the First National Bank of Commerce. During his tenure, he served as a fiduciary on its Asset Liability Management Committee. He also served as a principal with Booz Allen and Hamilton. While there, his duties included advising executives of Fortune 500 companies on fiduciary processes. Ron also represented our firm in 2012 on the industry task force that developed the fiduciary standard for ERISA plan administrators. Ron, it's great to have you in the guest chair today.
Well, Christy, it's great to be here. It's a little bit odd being on this side of the microphone. Many times sitting in your chair, but I'm certainly looking forward to it.
Indeed. Well, the Protection Act of 2006 was enacted. The Department of Labor has found massive procedural issues among retirement plans that are sponsored by nonprofit organizations, the 403B plans. How did that happen?
Well, there are probably a couple of major contributing causes. First of all, the sudden exposure in 2006 to a previously unknown regulatory system caught a lot of executives in the nonprofit arena off guard. And it caught them off guard for a couple of key reasons. I think, first of all, there has been little focus in the past from the vendor community, that is, those organizations that have been installing, selling, advising on 403B plans in a way that helped their plan sponsor clients come to grips with what a fiduciary responsibility actually looks like. And then, of course, with ERISA's own fiduciary standards of care that have some very specific requirements to them, training would have been required, which I believe we are seeing evidence that the nonprofit industry has not had it available to it, or in many cases, due to the press of other business issues, have not pursued. So two key things, I think, sudden exposure to a previously unknown regulatory system and little or no training in the disciplines required by ERISA of retirement plan fiduciaries contributed to where we are today.
It does sound like nonprofits were caught a bit off guard. In your experience, what has the reaction been among nonprofit executives to these duties imposed upon them by ERISA?
Well, in fairness, I think it's first of all important to understand the backdrop in the industry with respect to fiduciary standards of care. There have been a number of major findings conducted by no less than the Securities and Exchange Commission, for example, that have concluded that while standards exist in many other aspects of commerce, both here in this country and internationally, the financial services industry just doesn't have standards. So it makes it very difficult for any executive who's cast in a role that has a fiduciary responsibility to it to really understand the tactics of how that looks day in and day out. In the commercial world, organizations that manufacture and sell products for things like automobiles, airplanes, and all kinds of other end product are constrained by standards developed and maintained by ISO. And I think that's a very good comparison for our industry, and that is that we lack anything that looks like an ISO standard, and therefore a huge amount of ignorance, let's call it, or lack of understanding of what it takes to be a fiduciary would only be a natural outgrowth of that. And I think there's another reaction we've seen and are experiencing in our own practice that typifies the way executives in the nonprofit community are reacting to ERISA. Many have been operating under the mistaken belief that their vendors handle it. By handle it, I'm talking about fiduciary issues. And in fact, vendors haven't really done a whole lot to dissuade their clients from believing that's the case, because in the last 4 or 5 years, fiduciary sells. If you can portray yourself as a vendor of services with a strong fiduciary support system, you're typically going to get a much stronger hearing with a prospective client than if the fiduciary issue is either ignored or not given proper attention. So I think there are a couple of factors here that have caused this kind of reaction among nonprofit executives that are a bit beyond their ability to have controlled it up to this point.
So you mentioned fiduciary standards of care. So if a nonprofit's retirement plan offers enough investment options to its employees, isn't that good enough?
Well, in the pre-ERISA era, that might have been. The reason for that is that in that period, the most obvious matter that an executive could attend to would be the investments, because after all, that really is what retirement plan participants are looking for. They want good returns. They want to be able to know that a dollar saved today is going to turn into something more than a dollar when they're ready to retire, and that they're going to be in a position to sustain a lifestyle that they become accustomed to when they retire. So what this has done, with that is the focus on investments, it led nonprofits to adopt packaged or bundled programs typically offered within annuity programs that were offered by insurance companies. Now, in the ERISA era, investments is only one of four disciplines for which nonprofits are responsible. Those other three disciplines include governance, administration, and controls. In fact, violations of ERISA are far more likely to occur in one of those disciplines than investments. When we take a look at some of the catastrophic collapses that have taken place in the marketplace in recent years, you could start with Enron back in 2001, the Madoff mess in the mid part of the last decade were catastrophes that were caused largely because the fiduciaries for the organizations who were involved in those losses, many billions of dollars, no less, were found to be failing in the disciplines other than investments. That is, either a control or administration discipline was either ignored, or the tactics on how to properly implement those disciplines were unknown and unpracticed in those organizations.
So given these developments, how can or how should 403B plan sponsors determine if they are okay with ERISA, or rather if their plan and if their processes attend to the four disciplines you mentioned, the investments, governance, administration, and controls?
Well, a really simple answer would be to go get trained. But the fact of the matter is that the executives who oversee retirement plans typically are assigned significant duties in their organizations that go way beyond their role in the retirement plan area. Typically, the responsible executive is the chief financial officer, or in larger firms, it may be a vice president or manager of human resources. So these individuals have got a plateful of responsibilities, and in fact, other regulatory areas for which they're responsible. So merely suggesting to get trained is an unrealistic fix to the situation. The better way to go is to combine training with the commissioning of a review of the retirement plan. The review should be conducted by an organization that specializes in practice audits, not financial audits necessarily, but practice audits. And the organization should be skilled, trained, and experienced in the four disciplines of ERISA fiduciary duty that you've just mentioned. The assessment or the audit would then summarize steps. Typically, it's going to show any gaps in practices and becomes a very useful tool in developing a game plan on how to cure deficiencies, if any exist, and then also how to maintain improvements ongoing. But again, caution should be exerted in selecting an assessment firm because we're seeing situations where firms that sell other services, record keeping, investment advice, and so on, are offering to perform assessments of this type with the actual intent of securing the other form of engagement ongoing. So that would make that type of assessment highly biased and typically unreliable.
So, Ron, I know that during your tenure as CEO with Roland Criss, that Roland Criss has conducted hundreds of plan review assessments attending to those four disciplines. In light of all of that work, what stands out in your mind as the area or areas of greatest exposure right now for nonprofits that sponsor these 403B plans?
That's a good question. I would say that there are three major sources of danger for nonprofits. The findings that drive my conclusion on the three major sources are well documented by the U.S. Department of Labor. The first one would be excessive compensation paid to vendors. Now, what's excessive compensation mean? That is a subject that is a very confusing issue for retirement plan sponsors because, frankly, very few of them are trained in supply chain management tactics. There is not a great understanding of how vendors in the retirement community price their services. But the fact of the matter is that the Department of Labor, due to the introduction of a fee disclosure regulation a couple of years ago, is really hammering retirement plan sponsors in the nonprofit world hard for having overseen the implementation and ongoing presence of retirement plans that charge excessive fees to the participants. The second area, the second major danger, I would say, would be what I call the procedural vacuum. ERISA's fiduciary standards of care insist heavily on the existence of a defined, evident procedural system, well documented, and maintained by retirement plan sponsors. And in today's world, due to the newness of ERISA jurisdiction, the procedural prudence that ERISA requires is largely missing in many, many 403B environments. And then finally, I would say the third major source of danger is little proof of effective vendor management. In July of 2010, the U.S. Department of Labor issued what many consider to be an outburst that identified what it called an information gap between vendors of retirement plan services and their plan sponsor clients. And the DOL went to great length to identify its view of the harm that this information gap is causing plan participants and insisted in the release that it intended to at that point, and certainly has done so in practice, ramp up its enforcement of better monitoring of vendors by 403B plan sponsors.
So you mentioned that defined evident procedural system that is required now is missing. So from a fiduciary management standpoint, from a risk and liability management standpoint, how do executives best prepare? And how do they create that roadmap, that defined evident procedural system for where they need to go in this new environment?
Well, there are about only two ways to do that. First of all, they could do it themselves. They could get trained in ERISA's fiduciary standards of care, as I mentioned a bit ago, and conduct their own self-assessment. If that's a route that a 403B plan executive intends to take, then I would suggest strongly to get a copy of the fiduciary standard from the Investment Fiduciary Leadership Council. A copy of that document can be had online. The website address for that is ifl.council.org, ifl.council.org. The other approach is to get help from a qualified ERISA fiduciary assessment firm. Not only do assessments of that type typically identify where the plan stands and gaps that exist, but it should also help the retirement plan move forward and getting better and maintaining improvements ongoing.
Excellent, excellent. Well, we're just about out of time, but I have one last question for you, Ron. In your experience, among all of these demands that executives at nonprofits face, where on their order of priorities should verifying their fit with ERISA appear?
Well, I think it should be a right there with the duty to ensure their organization's overall viability as a going concern. And that's because few other business functions that they manage can result in draconian fines and personal liability to the executive if not done correctly. Confidence that all is well in the ERISA area should be an executive's major concern.
Absolutely, absolutely. Ron, thank you so much for allowing me to put you in the guest chair today. We greatly appreciate your participation on the show. For our audience, I want to remind you to tune into our next podcast when we are going to cover how to implement and measure the fiduciary standards that we've talked about today. If you are an executive with a nonprofit, please visit our website at rolandcriss.com. That's rolandcriss.com for more information about our nonprofit leadership forum, which is an exclusive resource for C-suite nonprofit executives and professionals. And we provide thought leadership and guidance on industry best practices through that forum. Thank you so much for joining us, everyone, and have a great day.